Well, I was really pleased to have my oldest son and his wife and my grandchildren move into Helena in January of this year, and we drove over that way to help them get moved into their new home. And who was waiting there to help them move in but Lance and a number of the other church members there from the church family. So I felt like it was quite appropriate then, given his eagerness to greet new members of the church and work at getting them moved in and developing that relationship, how appropriate it is that Lance is going to come and share a lot of experience as a minister in developing families in the church. And I'm looking forward to hearing what you have to say. And I'll let you introduce your wife when you get up here. So,
thank you, sir.
Thank you.
This is my wife, Dory. Dory and I have been married 21 years now. Now, notice I said that with a question mark at the end of it. So yeah, my name is Lance Love. I am at the South Hills Church in Helena right now, and I do appreciate Leslie. He gave me a call. Was that back in May or something like that? March, April, something? It's been a while. He called and told me kind of the theme of this, and I said, you know, there's something that I really would like to share, and I appreciate you giving me the opportunity to do this. But I also have to tell you a little bit of a story before I get into what I'm actually talking about. We moved to Helena a year ago, and I don't know if it's because I'm getting older or what, but this whole last year I have just been in kind of a fog. It's just been really, really tough for me. Leaving a church where I was for 22 years, transitioning to a new position in a new town, meeting all new people, was just pretty overwhelming, and I didn't really know what was going on. Matt clarified it for me in our group here. My net was busted. I think that's really what was going on. And so Dory and I just finished a long vacation about a month ago. Her mom was put into hospice. We went to Illinois. She passed away. And then we had continued on a trip we had planned down to Texas, and we're gone for a little over a month. And there was a part of that trip that I didn't even really want to come back. My net was busted. I was kind of there. On our way back, all of a sudden, it was like this fog lifted, and I'll get to in a little bit what I think brought that about. But then I got home, and I remembered Leslie had asked me to speak, and now that things were clear, I thought, I don't have anything to say. But I went ahead and put something together, so hopefully tonight you'll get something out of what I have to talk to. So, or what to talk about. Anyway, just to let you know, you have to know a little of my background to understand why this topic was important to me. I did not grow up in the church. Now, I had some church affiliation growing up. My grandparents on my mom's side were very, very faithful in their church attendance. They came from a non-Sunday school. At one time, they had been a single cup. Pretty much a non-institutional, you guys know the terms I'm using here, okay. That's kind of the background that I came out of. And when we went to church with them, we sat on the back pew. As soon as the last amen was said, we left. And so for me, my experience growing up was just, you know, church is just something old people do. And I didn't have any use for it. And so I didn't go for a long, long time. As a kid at home, normally we would go Easter, Christmas, something like that. So we didn't go to church a whole lot. And when you don't go to church a whole lot, and then you do become a Christian and you start getting involved with the church, you discover that there's all kinds of rules and things that the church has that I didn't know about. Okay? So when I did become a Christian, I was always doing things that broke those rules and caused a lot of people to raise their eyebrows. But I was a little stubborn, and I decided I was just going to make them put up with me. And I was going to keep growing in my relationship with God because it was an awesome thing. But then after 14 years in the medical field, I'd done some work with a couple of churches, worked in doing some volunteer youth work at a church in Washington State. That's where I met Walter and Cindy the first time. Went back to Texas, worked at a church as a worship leader, and different things happened, and I felt that God was calling me into full-time ministry. So I left the medical field. I went to the Center for Christian Education in Arlington, Texas, and we always have to say that was formerly the Preston Rhodes School of Preaching. And as soon as I graduated there, I took my first position in Moline, Illinois, at the Moline Church of Christ in 1999. Now, the Center for Christian Education taught me a lot. I studied hermeneutics, I studied apologetics, preaching, Greek, a little bit of Hebrew, some other aspects of preaching for the local congregation. But there were things that they did not teach me in preaching school. And I want to share a couple of stories of those with you real quick, if you don't mind. You guys okay with a story or two? Leading singing tonight reminded me of this. This didn't happen after preaching school. First time I ever led singing was at the Everett Church of Christ in Everett, Washington. And I had sang country and western music back in high school and college and stuff. In fact, that's what I was going to do for a living, was be a country and western. Who laughed? She heard me. So anyway, so I'm going through the songbook looking for a song, and there's that one song, Oh, They Tell Me of a Home. Oh, okay. I had never heard that sung in a church before, but if any of you are music people, country music people, Willie Nelson had a gospel album called The Troublemaker, and Willie's version of that goes, "Oh, they tell me of a home far beyond the skies. Oh, they tell me of a home far away." So that's how I led it. "Oh, they tell me of an unclouded day," and I'm tapping my feet now. I mean, I'm just really getting into it. Someone came up to me afterwards and said, "That's not how that song goes." I like Willie's better, but that's just... But a couple of things I discovered they didn't teach me in preaching school. My first full summer there in Moline, I was informed that the preacher was in charge of Vacation Bible School. I said, "I've never even been to a Vacation Bible School. What does the person in charge of Vacation Bible School do?" And they said, "Well, you lead all of the songs, you teach all the lessons and stuff." And I said, "What songs? I don't know any of the Sunday school songs." And so that was one of the things they didn't teach me in preaching school. Another lesson happened one Sunday morning, not long after I got there. At the end of my sermon, I offered the invitation, and there was a lady in the congregation named Pauline. Pauline brought her husband up. His name was George, and she said, "Lance, George wants to be baptized." Now, you have to understand, George had had a stroke a few years before, and he had some dementia stuff going on. The only two words I had ever come out of George's mouth were, "Okay," if you ask him how he was doing, and "Yeah," was his answer to everything else. The only two words I'd ever heard out of George, and I'm thinking, how did he communicate to her that he wanted to be baptized? But I wasn't going to ask that question, So I said, "Okay." So we got George up into the dressing room, got a couple other guys to help me. We get him into his baptismal robe, and I go down into the water. I've got my waders on, and I reach up and take George's hand, and he looks at me kind of funny, but he takes my hand, and he takes his first step down, and I heard the third word out of George's mouth. He said, "Cold." And I said, "Yeah, George, is cold." Well, then he turns around and he starts going back. And I'm like, "Wow, okay." So we finally coax George down into the water, and we're standing there, and I ask him the questions. "George, do you believe that Jesus is the Christ, the Son of the living God?" His fourth word, "No." And I'm like, "Oh, man." I said, George, Pauline said you wanted to be baptized. Is that true? No. I got 130 people watching this. They didn't teach me this in preaching school. So I said something that kind of soothed it over, and we got George up and dressed and stuff. Well, the next day, Pauline calls me. She says, Lance, he's ready now. I said, Pauline, how big is your bathtub? Maybe I could just come over there and we could just fill up the bathtub and do it there. Well, one of Pauline's church rules that I learned that afternoon was he has to be baptized in a church building, in a Church of Christ church building, so we didn't have any other options. So I said, all right, Pauline, meet me up here about 2 o'clock. And so I started calling people. I said, hey, this is a situation. I've got any suggestions. I'm calling my old professors and stuff like that. Well, one of them said, if you can get him into the water and you can put a chair in there, if you can get him to sit down on the chair, maybe he'll be easier to lean back. And I said, that's a great idea. So Pauline gets there with George, and I explain this to her, and she said, that's a great idea. And I said, but I want you down in the water with me. And she says, okay. So Pauline and I got him dressed. Pauline got dressed. I get my waders on. I went back and got one of our little folding chairs out of the fellowship hall, set it down there. We finally got George, and by the way, I asked him the questions before we got into the cold water this time. He answered appropriately. We got him set down on the chair, and I went to lay him back, and his fingernails dug into the concrete on that baptistry. I mean, there was no budging him. And so I'm standing beside him, and I'm trying to push him back without breaking his neck. Pauline is standing in front of him. She just lunges and catches both shoulders with one in each hand, and she goes over. The chair pulls up. I go down on top of her. My waders fill up. We're all wrestling. I just know one of us is going to drown, you know? About a month later, Ronnie Wiggins, who was our instructor at the he was the dean of the Center for Christian Education at that time, he came up, and he was doing a worship workshop for us, and we're having lunch, and I said, hey, there's things you didn't teach us. And he said, like what? And I shared that story with him, and I thought he was going to have a heart attack right there. But so there were a lot of things that I knew, realized very quickly, I did not know about ministry. And one of the things I didn't know was what kind of relationship was I, as the minister, supposed to have with the members of the congregation. Now, in my short time in churches, I had not met or known many preachers very well. One, I did become pretty good friends with. The rest of them that I'd ever worked with or went to church where they served always seemed to kind of keep a little bit of a distance. And so at that time, early on in my ministry there in Moline, we did still have preachers' meetings. And there were some other preachers' churches in the area that were a little bit older than me, had a little more wisdom. And so at one of our meetings, I was asking them, how do I develop relationships with the members? You know, how close do I get with them or anything? And I remember hearing from these guys very clearly that I was never supposed to get real close with the members of the congregation. And some of the reasons they said this, they said, don't ever share with them your own struggles or hardships, because the members of your congregation are going to expect you as a minister to have all your ducks in a row. And if they ever find out that you don't, you may not be the minister there very long. And then I had another guy told me, he said, you don't ever want to make friends with members, because if you make friends with some members and not all members, then it's going to appear that you have favorites or that you have an agenda and you're lining up the people on your team. So the consensus overall by all of them was you keep your distance. You can't really trust the members of your congregation. And I just remember thinking, that is just absolutely absurd. If I can't trust them, how can they ever trust me? And in the bits of study that I had done in the New Testament, I always had this impression that maybe Jesus and his disciples and his apostles were kind of friends. And he had some favorites. And it didn't seem to negatively impact his ministry. And so being the stubborn kind of guy I was, I just disregarded these older, wiser men's advice and decided I would make friends in the congregation. After all, if it didn't work out, preachers never stayed very long anyway, right? Yeah, okay. So I have always been pretty much an open book. So in my preaching, I used a lot of stories from my own life to illustrate wrong behavior and how God can change people who have gone off the deep end. And I know that's not anything unheard of. It's not anything new. But remember, I said I didn't grow up in the church. Some of my stories were a little bit more colorful than some people were used to hearing. But one of the cool things about that, or one of the reasons I did that, I felt they needed to know me. They needed to know my story. Walter, if you'll bring up this first passage there. John chapter 15, verse 12 through 17. Jesus says, "My command is this, love each other as I have loved you. Greater love is no man than this, that one lay down his life for his friends. You are my friends if you do what I command. I no longer call you servants, because a servant does not know his master's business. Instead, I have called you friends, for everything that I learned from my Father, I have made known to you. You did not choose me, but I chose you to go and bear fruit, fruit that will last, that the Father will give you whatever you ask in my name. This is my command, love each other." Now, I want you to notice there the difference between a servant and a friend. A friend knows what's going on with his master. He knows his master's life. He knows his master's business. And so I thought it would be appropriate for me to share my life, my business, with the members of the congregation. If you'll go to the next one, Walter, in Badag, or however you want to, that Greek lexicon, there's the definition of the word philos, which is the word translated friend. There are a couple of them there. You can see the first one is pertaining to having a special interest in someone. The next one, number two, says one who is on intimate terms or in close association with another. It's a friend. And as I shared stories, the stories that I shared were very intimate. They were very personal. And on more than one occasion, people would come up to me and tell me, you know, preachers don't usually talk like that from the pulpit. But I said, but that's just me. That's my story. That's who I am. But I also noticed that people, as I shared my life with them, they were a lot more willing to share theirs with me. I think they realized that there was nothing they were going to tell me that was going to really shock me, because I had seen and experienced a lot of that. Now, I want to make sure that you understand, I'm not trying to toot my own horn. I know I'm not the only minister that's ever built strong relationships and intimate friendships with members of the congregation. But by doing so, I was blessed in ways that I didn't even know were going to happen. And I want to share this with you tonight, because I hope that something I say may help you develop friendships that can bless you the way I was blessed by what happened there. Next slide, Walter. The International Bible, International Standard Bible Encyclopedia says one of the main characteristics of friendship in both the Old and the New Testament is loyalty. It says, there's a quote in there that says, through both good and bad times of life, friends are bound together. And then there are these passages from Proverbs. Proverbs 17:17 says, a friend loves at all time, and a brother is born for adversity. Proverbs 18:24 says, a man of many companions may come to ruin, but there is a friend who sticks closer than a brother. And then Ecclesiastes 4, verse 10 says, if one falls down, his friends can help him up, but pity the man who falls and has no one to help him up. You know, being a preacher or a minister or even an elder or shepherd doesn't make us immune from hardships, does it? And we, like everyone else, sometimes need friends there beside us when things fall apart. Well, within a year of my starting my ministry there in Moline, my wife at that time left and filed for divorce. I had, in the 3 years of preaching school, all of my credentials for what I did in the medical field had expired. And even though there were a lot of rules that I didn't know about the church, one that I was pretty certain of was that Churches of Christ don't keep divorced ministers. And so I called the men of the congregation and explained to them what was going on. I said, I don't know what to do. And so they came together. It was on a Wednesday night. They met about an hour before we started our Bible study. And we go into the room, and I tell them what's happening. I said, my wife filed for divorce. She's left, and I don't know what I'm going to do. And they said, Lance, would you step out for a little while? Let us talk about this. And so I did, and I stood outside for probably about 5 minutes, and then they opened the door and called me back in. But when I went back in, I didn't walk into members of the congregation. I didn't even walk into the men's committee. I walked into a room full of friends who were crying and upset and hurt. And the spokesman for the group told me, he said, you know, Lance, we've kind of watched what's gone on over the last years, and as much as we hate to admit it, this doesn't really surprise us. They said, we want to do whatever we can to help the two of you. But more than anything else, we just want you to know, we want you to stay here, and we want you to serve us. And those friends stood by me. They counseled me. They took me out to lunch when I needed that. They did everything that they could to be my friends. I remember one day I got to the courthouse because we were going through a custody battle for my daughters. And I pulled up, and I don't know, I'm not going to ask for a show of hands, but if any of you have ever been through this, especially if you are trying to serve God and your life falls apart this way, it's embarrassing. You feel dirty, you feel ashamed, you wish it would just all go away, but it just kind of keeps dragging on and on and on. And so I had to go to the courthouse for a custody hearing, and I pull up into the parking lot and get out of my car, and then a couple of cars down, these four older members of the congregation, two older couples, get out. And I was just like, oh. And so I walked over and I said, guys, I said, look, I appreciate you wanting to be here. I said, but this is embarrassing and it's shameful. And I said, and I don't want you guys hearing what's going to be said in there, because if you've ever been through one of these things, people will drag up every bit of dirt and everything from your past. And my past was pretty colorful. And I said, I don't really want you guys being here listening to this. And right in that parking lot, they confessed to me that they'd been there before too. And they'd been through it alone. And they wanted to be there with me. And so they came in and they listened and they sat and cried with me and hugged me. They supported me and they took care of me. That was a really tough year for me. And I don't know if I would have survived and remained faithful without my friends. And to be honest, at that time, the members of my congregation were the only friends I had. I had, you know, I told you earlier, and I've only been there a year, when I first got there, we had these preachers' meetings. The preachers that told me not to develop friendships and stuff never called. One guy called me right when he first heard about it and told me he'd be praying for me. And I never heard from any of them for a year after that. Had some guys from the conservative Christian church in town who would stop by my office, who would take me out to lunch. They were there for me, but the Church of Christ guys all over that part of Iowa and Illinois just seemed to kind of vanish into thin air. And I remember about a year later, we were having our annual area-wide singing. And one of them walked in the door, and when he saw me, I thought he was going to fall over. And he kind of walked up. He said, "I didn't think you were still going to be here. I wanted so bad to say if you had called, you'd know." But he didn't. So that's kind of what I went through, and that is where my friends in the congregation did what Proverbs and Ecclesiastes said. They stood by me. They lifted me up. And then there were some other blessings that developed out of those friendships. Proverbs 27, verse 16 says, "The kisses of an enemy may be profuse, but faithful are the wounds of a friend." And Proverbs 27:9 says, "Perfume and incense bring joy to the heart, and a pleasantness of one's friend springs from his earnest counsel." Now, again, I was new to ministry when I got there. Had no idea other than, you know, I knew how to preach. They taught me that in school. I knew how to teach. I knew how to study the Bible. Didn't know how to do baptism very well, evidently. Didn't know how to do vacation. But there were a lot of things. I knew I wasn't going to have any idea what to do. I knew there would be expectations of the church that I would not know, that they didn't think to communicate with me. And so I did this very wise thing, I thought. I asked for an evaluation every 6 months. And they gladly obliged. And so every 6 months, they would have a meeting without me being present, and they would discuss the things I was doing well and the things I was not doing so well. And then they assigned a man back there named Dave Kirshner to come in every 6 months and go over this stuff with me. The great thing was Dave and I had developed a friendship. And so Dave could come in and just be real honest with me and say, "Lance, you are really just failing in this aspect really bad." And there were times, you know, I would be upset. It hurt my feelings and everything. But these were words from a friend. And it really did help me know what I needed to do to serve that congregation better. It's interesting, Dave and I are still friends to this day. We were back in Illinois a couple of weeks ago, and I spent some time with him and his wife. The church back there in Moline during that time was not unlike a lot of others in our brotherhood. We didn't have elders for much of the time that I was there. There was a period where they, not me, but they chose some guys to serve as elders. That didn't go quite as good as they might have hoped, but that's another story for another time. And as some of you know, it can be pretty frustrating working with elders that aren't really doing a good job. And especially if you don't have anyone that you can go and talk to about it. And by this time, most of the other area preachers were gone. I didn't really have anybody that I could talk to. Especially I didn't have anyone I could talk to if the problem was my elders. Now, I know none of you have ever had problems with your elders, because that's never an issue. And if it is, Bruce is going to settle all of that on Wednesday morning. He's going to clear up all of that stuff. But I was really struggling. I didn't know what to do. I didn't have anybody around. All the other churches didn't have ministers. Nobody I could turn to. And so I thought, you know, what I need is like one or two men that I can just be blunt, honest with. So found out there was a guy in our congregation there. His name's Blake Adams. Found out Blake was liked to fly fish. Well, I like to fly fish. And I'd watched Blake and his family for, you know, a couple of years. Blake was an accountant for John Deere, so he was gone a lot. And so I hadn't ever gotten really close with him, but I just thought, Blake is one of those guys that I can respect. And I think I'm going to pounce on him and see if he'll be my friend, you know. And so I went to him one Sunday, and I said, "I hear you like to fly fish." And he said, "I love to fly fish." And I said, "I know a place up in northeast Iowa called Bankston Creek." I said, "Let's go up there and go fishing one day." He said, "Let's take the tents and we'll camp, make a campfire and just have a good go at it." And I said, "Sounds great." So I picked him up one morning. We're driving up to Bankston, and I said, "Blake, I have to tell you, I have ulterior motives." And he said, "Oh, really?" I said, "Yeah." And so I explained to him. I said, "I need a guy in the congregation that I can be just really blunt with, that I can go to for counsel and advice. said, I really just need a good friend. And he said, let's see how it goes at campfire tonight, and I'll let you know. So for till about 2 o'clock in the morning, Blake and I set up, and I told him, I said, here's where I'm struggling. And he listened, and he counseled, and we just got to be such great friends. And still are to this day, as a matter of fact. I talk to him frequently. And one day, he calls me. I'll let you get that. Give me a reason to take a drink. One day, Blake called me, and he said, hey, we want you and Dory to come over. His wife and Dory could be twins. I mean, they act alike, think alike, talk alike, look alike. He said, why don't you get the guys to come over and have dinner with us? And I said, okay. And so we go over there, and he said, after dinner, he says, hey, I want to bring you downstairs and show you my new fly tying setup. I said, oh, cool. So we're going down the stairs. We get to the bottom of the stairs, and he turns around, and he says, I have ulterior motives. I said, all right, what did I do this time, Blake? And he said, no. He said, Lance, he said, they've approached me about serving as an elder. He said, the only thing is, I don't want to do anything that's going to ruin our relationship, because our friendship means so much to me, and so I wanted to know from you what you think about that. And I sat there for a minute. I said, no, that ain't right. You're my elder. I'm not sharing it with anybody. But then I thought, and I knew this, I said, Blake, the reason they're asking you is the same reason I asked you. I said, because you're an honest man. And I told him, I said, as long as you and I can continue to be honest with each other and talk frankly with each other, we're going to be good. And he said, okay, we're good then. I remember a year or so after that, we were talking. I had proposed a way to remodel our auditorium. Blake and I are out in the auditorium that Wednesday night before Bible class, and we're talking about something. And, you know, the great thing about me and Blake is if we don't agree, we just say it, you know. And so we're standing there, and I'm telling him, this is what I think we need to do. And he's like, Lance, that won't work. We need to do this. I said, Blake, that won't work. And we're just kind of going back and forth like this. And I remember one of the little old ladies from church came up to me after class at night. She says, were you and Blake fighting? I said, no, we weren't fighting. We're friends. I said, and friends can talk openly and honestly with each other. And that was just like a foreign concept to some of our church members, that the preacher and the elder could actually be friends together. And I'm like, guys, okay, another lesson for another time, and Bruce will clear all of that up on Wednesday. So ultimately, I had two other guys that I had asked to help me, to be my friends, to be the ones there for me. And don't you know, both of them got asked to serve as elders as well. Maybe there's something to that. But because of the friendship and the relationship that I had with them, I trusted their counsel. They could come to me, tell me what I needed to work on, tell me things where I was just wrong. And I knew that this wasn't coming from a person of superiority or a person of, you know, some kind of, this was coming from my friend who wanted me to be a better servant, wanted the church to be better, and it really helped us in so many ways. Another great advantage, and I kind of touched on this earlier, building these friendships with the members, was it allowed me to talk very frankly to members of the church who were going through hard times, because they had heard my stories of hard times. We were friends enough that I could tell them what they needed to hear, and they knew that it wasn't coming from the preacher, but it was coming from their friend. Now, again, I don't by any stretch of the imagination claim to be an expert in any of this stuff. I don't really have that much experience. I've only served in two congregations. I'm at Helena now. I've been there for a little over a year, and I'm working to build friendships there. Other than that, I was only at Moline for a little over 22 years. And again, I don't claim that everything in Moline was perfect. It wasn't. But in the 22 years I served there, we didn't have any divisions. We didn't have any splits. There wasn't really any contention among members or anything like that. They became family. And I like to think that I had something to do with that. I don't know if I did or not, but I like to think I did. And in the last couple of months, in the last year, I've been back three times for funerals, all three times. And one of the great things about going back was they talk about the church as it's a family. And when we go back, Dory and I were back a couple of months ago when her mom passed, and then I had to go back a couple of weeks ago for another wedding. When we go back, we stay with friends. We go out to eat with friends. They ask how we're doing. They ask how our kids are doing, and we ask how their kids are doing, and we're sharing life with these people. And that's an amazing, awesome thing. Now, I said earlier, I think after your thing, I figured out why I was in that place I was. My net was broken. But what's interesting is Dory and I went back, and we spent about 10 days back in Illinois waiting for her mom to pass and then the funeral. And we got to spend a lot of time around those friends. As we started driving back to Helena, things just got clearer and clearer. And you were asking earlier, Matt, you know, who are your mentors? And it dawned on me, my friends are my mentors. Those are the people that kind of encouraged me. They told me, you know, Lance, you did some good stuff. And we want you to go and keep doing it. And they encouraged and they supported and they kicked me out and said, go back to Montana. And so here we are. So again, I don't share this with you to tell you this is the way you need to do ministry, because every church is different. Every person is different. But I share this with you because developing close personal friendships with members of my congregation has been such a blessing to me. It's kept me faithful. It's kept me strong. It's healed my net when I needed it. And hopefully something in this will help you as well. Thank you very much.
Praise God.